Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And a welcome to you. This is Andrew Horowitz, and welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 159. We are all the way to the end of April already. Can you believe how fast it is? I mean, the winter is over already. 2010, 4 months into it already, and where has the time gone? Well, it's gone to a lot of research, a lot of studying. I know you've been doing a lot of listening. You're probably either working hard, hopefully working hard these days, or hopefully finding a job, because we're seeing a little bit of a uptick in the unemployment prospects, or the employment prospects, better said. And overall, we're seeing a little bit of a kind of a, I guess we would call it an economy that is in a recovery phase, not in a growth phase by any means, but clearly in a recovery phase right now. Lots to talk about today. I thought what we'd do today is have kind of an all news and an all, you know, headline type of show today, along with some answers to your questions that you sent in to me. We got a lot of questions. I got a lot of emails. Thank you so much for sending them in. If anybody that wants to know, a couple of quick things you need to know is that if you want to send me an email, just send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And of course, if you want to follow me on Twitter, that would be great also at Andrew Horowitz. And that's over at Twitter. Just do that. Facebook is also available to you as well. Couple of things. So what's happening? Well, we saw a lot of movement in the markets over the last couple of weeks. Volatility picked up. As a matter of fact, on one day last week, we saw the VIX move up 30% in one day. If you remember what we talked about, that's the kind of the fear index, right? That index that we look at from the Chicago Board of Options Exchange to find out what traders are thinking is going to hold for the future. It was up 30% the day that Greece was downgraded. We're going to talk about that as well. And then it came down the next day when all of a sudden everything seemed all healed and all fine. But it's been an up and down situation when it comes to Greece. And let's not forget about Goldman Sachs and the government now trying to push a financial reform bill, which was put down by the Republican Senator DeBase by, I think it was three times. So they finally said, you know what? Fine. We're going to open up debate. We're going to start talking about it. So maybe now we'll find out more about that. And while we're still trying to figure out and decipher what's going on with this health bill, I actually talked to somebody today, and I had lunch with a good friend of mine who's in the pharmaceutical and in the healthcare area in that industry. And I said to him, I said, you know, what is the company line? Big company he works for. I said, what's the company line? You know, is it, you know, an understanding of what's happening with the healthcare bill? Or is it kind of still up in the air, not knowing? Because the last time I saw him about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, we talked about that nobody knows. Nobody has an answer. And he said to me that they still don't understand what the ramifications are going to be long-term for the company. I'm talking about a major company that you know, major blue chip. And there still hasn't been a lot of information that has flowed down to help out understand what is going on and what the ramifications, outlook, and outcome will be. But that's kind of, I guess, par for the course now. It's sort of like shoot first, ask questions later. So we're going to talk about a lot of things today. We're going to talk about all the news items. I'm going to talk about some economics. We're going to talk about some of the things that we brought up last week in the casino area, the gaming industry. Talk about the home builders that we talked about with Frank Curzio last week. All sorts of things to talk about. You know, one of the things I've been getting is a lot of emails from people. A lot of people are looking for direction. You know, they say, you know, Andrew, right now, is the market too frothy? Is it undervalued? We see these great earnings coming in. you know, what is going on here? What do I do? Do I invest my money? I held it off in the market for a long time. Now it seems like things are settling out. The answer that I have, the best answer I can give you is that the market itself, the stocks, a market of stocks, not the stock market, the market of stocks are filled with good stocks. They're filled with bad stocks. They're filled with stocks that will go up. They'll fill with stocks that will go down. The question is, if you want to have the opportunity to make money, you have to play. You can't sit on the sidelines. You can't just be on the sidelines. Now, maybe there's times that, yes, it is important to have some cash in the sideline. You know, you see things that are not doing so well. You don't have ideas that could fill up your portfolio. But the bottom line is, folks, and here's what I wanted to tell you early on in the show. If you haven't taken a look at the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, which is a very actively traded strategy where we have a very transparent and open discussion with our clients. We have a special client-only blog that we talk about what we do each and every week, and you see all the trades that happen. You learn from what we do while you're actually participating in the transactions. So if you want to check that out, I really highly encourage you. Is it a good time? Is it a bad time? We go short. We go long. You know, we're long short. All sorts of things happen. But if it's something that you've been thinking about, you can't get yourself off. You're just either paralyzed or you're in a situation where you just don't know what to do. Why don't you think about this? At least you get some education behind it and really participate with giving yourself some opportunity here. So all you do is go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Go over, there's a link right in the show notes from this particular podcast. You can watch a quick 14-minute video about what happens, a virtual tour of how we do things, and then kind of take it from there. But you have some choices. You can either sit around and do nothing, okay? You could act with conviction. What do you want for your life? That's the question. What do you want from your portfolio? Okay, we're going to end it with that. Just go to the website and check that out. Let's talk about things. Natural gas. Have you been following what's going on with natural gas? A few weeks ago, we had this announcement that there was, bizarre announcement, by the way, that there was this incorrect counting, this incorrect level of reporting on how much natural gas inventories were actually out there. So we're thinking, okay, that's interesting. So the next report, or maybe even the next report after that, we're going to start seeing numbers that really make sense because maybe they're showing too much of inventory out there. Now, a lot of people think that natural gas is the fuel of the future. It's more clean burning than, you know, fossilized fuel, standard fossilized oil, et cetera. And at the same time, it's plentiful. I mean, it's really plentiful. And as a matter of fact, we've seen over the last year an incredible amount of natural gas finds all over the world. And we see things like, you know, ExxonMobil getting into it by buying XTO Energy. And we see company after company really trying to attack this whole natural gas area. Well, here's the interesting thing. The next week after the announcement is made, they're going to start doing a better job, quote unquote, better job of counting and reporting on inventories. What happens? Well, we get a good number. It looks a little bit better. So natural gas starts creeping up a little bit. Well, the next couple of weeks go by and all of a sudden natural gas looks better. As a matter of fact, UNG, that really very difficult to judge ETF that plays the natural gas commodity, moved up very nicely. I mean, from where it was. I mean, it was horrendously low. But you know what? It's back down to its lows again. Natural gas again came out with higher than average inventories, which goes to show you that obviously there is a couple things going on. We have an extreme amount of inventory, and there's just not enough demand right now. The same thing is going on with oil, by the way, but oil has a little bit of a different play. The players in the oil pits want to push oil up when the economy moves up. Kind of moves in correlation with the stock market often. And, of course, it moves oftentimes inverse to the dollar. So oil has a little bit of a different situation. It's had that kind of inverse play to the dollar for a long time. But at the same time, more recently, it's been acting on its own. You know, oil traders, there's a lot of money when it comes to oil. And they could sell it multiple times. And they've done that in the past. And I think that when you look at the history back when oil was in the 140s last year, we saw that each barrel of oil was traded somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think it was, I don't know, it was like 14 or 12 or 14 times per barrel between it being sold and then resold and then sold in the commodity markets. By the time it got to market, it was sold like 14 times. It's just unbelievable. But that leads me to our first question. We have a question. Let me just find it. We've got a few questions here. This question is from, I don't know, let's see. No name. E. Pureman 99. So the question is, you've often referred to contango. where an ETF or something will have to buy and sell future, and there is a differential causing unintended fluctuations in the price of the ETF. I believe you said that you had a post on it. Or can you provide me a link where I can read up upon it? You know, the best place to look up Contango, a place is like, there's something called Investopedia. Investopedia is a great place. It has great definitions, examples, calculations sometimes, and it gives you other links. It's kind of like a Wikipedia, but for investing. It's been around for a long time. I believe that Forbes owns it now. Forbes bought the property. But basically, Contango is very simply, we'll take oil as an example, where the current spot price of oil, let's say, is $80 a barrel, and the future price of oil, the future price, let's say, in 2 months from now or next month, is $83 a barrel. So there's a higher price for the future pricing of the oil. So for delivery in 1 or 2 months, whatever we're picking, there's a higher price. There's the easy definition. So what happens is that in a sense, you could take delivery of oil now, sell the future to somebody else at 83, so you just made a $3 spread. Question is, what do you do with the position now? Well, that's why so many companies have filled up these oil tankers around the world floating with oil. We've seen a tremendous amount of inventory that usually is not counted in the standard inventory numbers, but they fill up these ships because it makes so much sense if the contango or the first month compared to the future months, the forward month in the futures contracts are a higher price. When you can make the spread, and even after subtracting the cost of renting the ship for a week, a month, 2 months, 6 months, whatever it is, it makes a lot of sense to do so. But I suggest you look up it over at either go to the website, our website at The Disciplined Investor, and in the search box just type in Contango. Or on the other hand, what you could do is simply go to Investopedia and look it up. I think that's a great place to do so. All right, so let's talk about Greece for a second. We've talked about this a lot. I talk about this on DH Unplugged on a regular basis because it is such an important thing to be looking at. Because Greece right now is the center of the sovereign debt crisis that everybody is so worried about. You know, we look at countries around the world. It started with Dubai. Well, it actually started with Iceland some time ago. But then Dubai had this meltdown more recently. Then we had Greece. We knew the pigs, the Portugal, Italy, even Ireland, and Greece and Spain were all having a lot of problems because their budgets were way off. Their deficits were way off. Their debt was much higher than GDP. It was this big problem. How were they going to pay it back? Well, this was going on for a number of months. Everybody was getting really worried about it. And we slowly saw the euro start to come down as people were betting against the situation. But you know what? It really wasn't a big deal. Well, all of a sudden, Greece has to come and they have to refinance. Well, that's all fine and good when they can refinance some of the debt and roll it over at a reasonable rate. But as there were more questions and more concerns about how Greece was going to actually pay back the money, simply what happened was that the price of the debt, in other words, the ability for Greece to issue debt at those low prices for a country such as Germany, United States, or Japan, were no longer going to hold. So what happened was that interest rates started creeping up, and then they went parabolic. We put a post on the site about this recently, but it costs over 10% compared to, let's say, 4% for Germany. Or maybe the same thing we're doing here in the United States, it may cost us 2%. So what happened was that Greece was going to have to roll over this debt, but they were going to have to pay this enormous VIG, if you will, this enormous amount of extra interest compared to what a bond of a country that was solid was going to have to pay, which was once again going to cost them more than they actually had from their overall tax revenues and their, you know, other bonds that they had comparatively and any other money they have coming into the country from, you know, exporting, et cetera. So here we are in a situation where it's kind of getting wound up, and there's no answer. So there comes Germany, there comes France, there comes EU, there comes the IMF, and we're saying, okay, well, we'll lend you maybe some money a little bit above market rates. Germany was kicking and screaming all the way, saying, hey, you know, guys, what are we bailing them out? They've been reckless with their monetary policy. They've been reckless with their spending. And you want us to stop and spend our money on their retirement, on their salaries? Let them go into an austerity program. Let them cut back. Let them really suffer. It's their problem. But you know what? It's not their problem. The problem is all of Europe's, because all of Europe right now, or a lot of Europe, is in fact tied to the single currency. And we see things like Spain's unemployment rate topping 20% in Spain. This is up from the first quarter when it was 18.5%, And it's higher than the expectations that was supposed to be about 19.8. Ireland may skip its planned mid-May bond auction because they're saying that the yields at the elevated levels are just no way. They say, in fact, in quote, if in the event they are still demanding the sort of premium we are looking at today, we have to seriously consider passing on it. So, okay, they'll skip a couple of months. But what's happening now is that this problem with this escalating fear about sovereign debt is going to cost countries more and more money. Whether or not inflation is here to raise interest rates, whether or not the actual sovereign nation itself goes and raises interest rates, if there is fear, just like the difference between a junk bond, which, by the way, Greece banks were downgraded again this week by Moody's. Standard & Poor's downgraded Greece to junk status for the sovereign debt this week, and that's what caused an entire sell-off of the environment. So we're going to see what's going to come out of this. I would bet if I had my druthers and my betting card here on this one that, yes, we're going to have to see a very broad-based bailout of Greece and Portugal and possibly backstopping Spain, because you can't do one without the other. The problem is there are estimates it's now going to cost anywhere in the neighborhood of $500 to $700 billion for Europe to do so. A lot of that will come from the IMF, but you know what? Here, we need to make sure that the dollar doesn't strengthen dramatically. One of the aspects of what Bernanke has done and what we've seen gone on in the industry of government is that they are trying desperately to keep the dollar at a reasonable level because it helps our imports. In fact, in our GDP number, it helps our exports. Let's back up there. A lower dollar helps our exports. I misspoke. So basically, when we look at our GDP number that was put out this week at a 3.2 compared to a 5.6 last quarter, 3.2 is kind of still anemic when we saw such a dramatic dive off a cliff in the several quarters prior. But still, we're in a little bit of a recovery. We're still seeing a positive GDP print. The problem, though, is that it came from consumers. That was great. It came from transfer payments, which were basically payments. I think it's something like 20% of the people in the United States are on some kind of payment from the government, whether it's welfare, whether it is Social Security, whether it is job benefits, whether it's something. 20% are now feeding on the money flow from the government. Kind of a fascinating number, isn't it? And what's more interesting is that when it comes to the overall consumer spending, we have to say that a lot of that has to do with the fact that the government is basically transferring money essentially to individuals who are essentially then spending it. Okay, that's great. That's where we're seeing some of the recovery. The soft spot were our exports again. And again, if we can keep the dollar down, that's a good thing for our exporting companies. And that's something they're looking to do. We'll see what's going to happen with that. But, you know, when we look at the overall reaction of the markets to Bernanke constantly saying that he's going to keep interest rates low for an extended period of time, or extended, you know, exceptionally low for an extended period of time, well, markets like that because that's going to be good for the dollar and the companies that, are working here or exporting from here. A couple other things that are interesting in the same genre of the Greece and the Spain and all that. And this is a question that comes in. And this one is from, I think there's a name on this one. I'm just grabbing it here. Okay. This one is from Vic Capron. He says, Andrew, can you explain on your next podcast or soon enough how economies as small as Iceland and Greece is causing so much turmoil in the U.S. markets? And let me turn the page over. He says, I think the uncertainty would lead to foreign investors to dump money in our markets into U.S. stocks. Yeah, that's true. That is definitely true. But there's, again, there's a very clear and a direct correlation and link to the currency markets when it comes to the situation in Greece and in Europe. You know, when they start pouring money into our assets, and when we say that the risk trade is off, which seems to go off and on a daily basis these days, it used to be kind of more of a longer-term situation, but it kind of goes off and on each day with the rants of the Greek prime minister and from Merkel from Germany and Sarkozy. Every day they're giving us mixed signals about what's going on. And what's happening here is a lot of it is currency-related, but you have to remember something. Even though these countries are very small and don't affect our situation from an export standpoint or from buying, it still is a fear factor from investors of where is the contagion going to go to? Is the contagion going to be just felt within Europe? And if it is, and if it does go into the broader European region, then what happens? Does that then affect us? What happens if it infects Germany and it really affects France and it affects maybe the UK somehow? How does then that affect us? So I think the issue that we really need to talk about, Vic, is what is the domino effect of all this? And that's when they use the word contagion. How does it affect the, you know, people pulling money out of banks? How does that affect people's investors' consideration of what currency to use and where to hold their dollars? So yes, I believe that they are pushing money into U.S. treasuries, and that's why we've seen so many auctions do well and why the rates are staying so low in the face of a recovering economy. So I think that ties it all together. So let's talk about one more thing in the same genre, which is Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Have you seen this? Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is going to be skipping a bond payment, about $450,000 that's due on May 3rd. And this is the second time the city's actually missed a debt payment. But this time, the Assured Guarantee Corp, which guarantees the principal, is going to actually make the payment to investors instead. So in other words, what that's saying is that, in a sense, Harrisburg is actually going to be defaulting on their payment here. So when we talked about, over the last few weeks, this idea, this thesis that we've had, that states are looking for other opportunities, alternatives to raising money, we have to think about the whole gaming industry. We talked about this last time. I brought up Shuffle Master. We talked about WMS Industries. And actually, one thing that we bought earlier, right after that, was Boyd Gaming, BYI, Boyd Technologies. They make the slot machines. IGT is another one. With the boom that we've seen in gaming, not only domestically in Vegas and in Atlantic City, and then obviously being approved in Maryland, we talked about Tennessee, we talked about the expansion in Florida, but now Italy, and BYI has a major deal. 3,600 units are being shipped to Italy for the first time. And we're seeing this fantastic explosion and this dynamic where there is a desire not only to have gaming to bring in tourists and to enhance the opportunity for more tourist dollars, but when it comes to the states here in the United States, it seems very logical that there's an alternative to the income flow because they're going to be able to maintain a substantial income from the casinos. And the only problem will happen that I see is if it becomes too dilutive. So what happens if every single state has gaming? Well, okay, that may be good for the state, but it doesn't then draw in any kind of additional tourism. But still, when you look at the gaming, it is a part and parcel kind of we'll call it about, you know, just whether it's called leisure, vacationing, and lifestyle. There's a lot of people that like it. A lot of people don't. A lot of people think it's immoral. But if you think about the dollar opportunity for the states, we still think there's a great opportunity in many of the names in that space. And I just named a few of them. But look how they've done over the last week, as a matter of fact. And look how some of the casinos have done over the week. But I think there's a great opportunity when it comes to some of the picks and shovels part of it, right? When it comes to maybe the companies that are supplying the machinery, and particularly the slot machines. That's something that I think is going to be really a longer-term play that can work out very, very well. So check out those three companies, WMS, symbol WMS, Shuffle Master, SHFL, Boyd, which is BYI, IGT, which is IGT, okay? All right, another thing I want to mention, a couple of things that are really neat going on, and we're going to talk about some technology. There's some cool technology things going on right now. About 80% of the companies in the S&P 500 have actually beaten their earnings estimates. Now, some people say that, well, they put the bar low and all. Well, the bar wasn't that low this time. As a matter of fact, into earnings season, we saw a lot of increases. We saw a lot of companies saw their estimates by analysts increase. Revenues actually were building too. Last week we talked to Frank about that, and revenues have been actually beating. Even companies that come close have been doing well because, you know, even though the stocks have run up, the fact is we see a great opportunity. Many companies are actually boosting their guidance. At the same time, in this week's GDP number, we saw that the employment cost index edged up ever so slightly, meaning that, and at least you can infer that, there's more people putting on either the payrolls or, more importantly, probably more people working more hours and more overtime. That's what we would think would happen first. So with all these companies beating right now, the question will be next quarter, more so next quarter, are they going to be able to maintain the continuation of these numbers? You know, there's a lot of people that's saying that, you know, 1350 on the S&P is the end of year target, and we're seeing that there is this great opportunity for the S&P to earn about $85 per share per, you know, per on average. You know, that could be. The question then will remain is what happens if expenses are tacked on through employment? Now, there's a recent study done, I think it was 2 weeks ago or a week ago. We talked about this on this week's DH Unplugged, in that approximately 70% of the manufacturing jobs that were lost during the recession are not going to be put on for many years to come. They're not going to be replaced. They're not going to be brought back. And that's due to a re-engineering process. It's due to the whole process of increased efficiency and technology. So with that in mind, the question then remains, well, when the unemployment eventually runs out, by the way, will it ever run out? They keep on extending it and extending it. But when it actually runs out, what's going to happen then to many of the consumer spending trends? That's a really big question right now, and it's kind of an open situation. But right now, the consumer area, restaurants, many of the stores, even the big box department stores, have been doing exceptionally well maintaining their expenses and, in fact, increasing their revenues. So when we look at that, here's what I think. I want you to think about this for a second. Intuitively, it would seem like with 8 million people out of work, very little hired, there shouldn't have been this big run-up in the retail, right? Think about that. That who's spending? Who's going to restaurants? Who's buying expensive items? Tiffany, look at that stock. I mean, through the roof. Who's doing all this? Who is spending this? Well, think about this for a second. It doesn't only have to be in the U.S. Stores that are worldwide may be seeing a great pickup in Brazil and China, South Korea, Singapore, India. India, an iPad is going for $2,500 because they can't get it on the Indian kind of eBay circuit, if you will. So there is money around. It may not be in our own backyard, but we are a globalized economy right now, so there may be some opportunities from overseas. In addition to that, you have to look at a little bit of a phenomena that people last year, about a year ago, think about yourself for a second. People last year were curled up in a ball. They weren't putting any money out. They were, you know, the wallet went in the pocket and didn't come out till you got home that night. Checks were written to utilities and to necessary items. And what's happened lately is the purse strings have opened up a little bit. Stock markets come back. Portfolios look a little better, or at least they are on their way to being better. We see that there is a general trend that people are kind of saying, you know what, maybe some of the worst is over. The banks have recovered a bit. Things are looking a little bit better. We're actually putting on jobs. Whether or not, next week, by the way, you're going to see a big print, side note, you're going to see a big print on the NFP number next Friday. And that's because there's going to be a huge, huge number that is being put on for the temporary census workers. You're going to see that for about 3 months or so, and that's going to drop off in August. Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden, kind of gave it away in a speech about 2 weeks ago. He says we're going to see anywhere from 300,000 to 500,000 new workers put on. Now, that's a slippery discussion because it's true, but they're temporary workers. So let's just say it was a great political discussion. He's misspoke about this many times, but I do believe that this is going to be the case, that you will, in fact, see a significant amount of people put on the payrolls. So don't be surprised with the number. That will probably not lead to a rate increase right away because everybody knows that it's a temporary number through about August, the end of August. But getting back to this point that there's more people that are working and at least things are getting a little bit better. At least it's not getting worse right now. So what's happened is that, you know, there's this feeling that I can go out and spend. I can actually go out and do for me. I'm going to buy myself a new shirt. I'm going to replace my sneakers. I'm going to go out and maybe buy myself that rim, that iPhone, that iPad, or a new computer, or I'm going to do something for myself because I've been suffering for so long. I'm going to go out and have some decent dinners. You know what? And not only that, the generation that's probably between the age of, let's call it 18 to 35, don't have as many cares as maybe the next generation up or the generation after that. That generation is the spending generation. They maybe don't work as much at savings, and they haven't stopped spending. Think about the younger generation what they know and what they do. They're all about the phones. They're all about eating out. They're all about music. They're all about movies and entertainment and clothing. Think about those stocks for a second. Think about the stock of Apple and Netflix, and think about some of the movie theaters that have done pretty well recently. Think about some of the clothing stores that have done very well in the teen area. So I think that when we think about the environment, we have to kind of move away from what we're doing and our personal experiences only and consider what's driving all this. And I think some of that answer comes in the next generation. Just a thought. All right, so it wouldn't be a good show, or at least it wouldn't be a show if we didn't talk about this whole situation, in this unfortunate situation in the Gulf of Mexico. This horrible situation where this Transocean rig, RIG is a symbol, and the BP explosion that killed 11 people and is sinking this rig right now, spilling about 5,000 barrels a day into the Gulf. And unfortunately, as it would happen, the winds are blowing that right on shore. There is some talk that this could be bigger than the Exxon Valdez. I got an email from a good friend, a client today, and he talked about, you know, what's going to happen here? Is this going to bankrupt BP? Well, we did some research on this, and we looked at some notes from CS First Boston, and they're commenting, and this is actually goes through JP Morgan comment as well, that the company is well covered by insurance, okay? They're covered by insurance, but by the way, they don't have business continuation or interruption insurance. They have liability insurance. That's an important issue. Massey Energy didn't have business interruption or liability insurance either, by the way. Okay? And that would pay you for interruption of business, of course. But nonetheless, when it comes to liability, there's about $125 million deductible. Basically, the comments are coming out that the belief is that BP and RIG, and especially on Transocean, which is RIG, they make the jackups, I believe the company is well covered by insurance, but the bigger concern are the potential loss of businesses with BP, which is about 12% of their total revenue, and the damages to their reputation. And this is an interesting situation. If it is, in fact, bigger than the Exxon Valdez and the cleanup, this is going to be, on a personal note, I was just in New Orleans, as you know, and my biggest concern is that this is going to be a massive problem for the whole region, where the oyster shells and the shrimping, the fishing, and everything in that area that just kind of started coming back again in a strong way because of Katrina is going to be ruined. Now, you have to stop for a second and say, wait a minute, you know, I remember something. Wasn't it, I don't know, 2 weeks ago that President Obama got on the television and said, we're going to be drilling, we're going to be drilling. We're going to open up the offshore areas to drilling. And everybody's like, really? Oh, that wasn't exactly what we thought you were going to say, but okay, we'll think about it. We'll talk about it. And some of the drilling companies, like a Diamond Offshore and Atwood Oceanics RIG, Transocean, really started doing well, because these are the companies that would really be building and running these, you know, offshore deep water rigs. But now, all of a sudden, does that put that in jeopardy? I know a lot of people I've been talking to people, and we're all just stunned at the incredible amount of destruction from this situation. Now, of course, accidents happen. How this happened, why this happened, where the fault's going to lie, well, that will be found out probably in about a year, because nothing happens fast when it comes to these investigations. My biggest concern, though, is that the recent figures show that it's going to take 2 months to cap this thing off. In the meantime, they're going to go down and try to put some relief valves in there and to move the oil from where it was spewing from into alternative containers, if you will. And if that takes, let's say, a month, can you imagine how much damage we're talking about? I mean, just an incredible amount of destruction of birds, of habitat. And I don't know how we can, you know, risk this kind of drilling so close to shore. In these kind of areas, there's nothing to say about it. From an investment standpoint, you know, would we be buying on the dips, BP and RIG? I just don't think so. There's other opportunities. You know, some of the companies that drill onshore, there's plenty of them. There's there's also companies that have good, solid reputations. We own Exxon, for example. Yes, they have some rigs, but And these accidents are very far and few in between. But nonetheless, you know, I don't know right now if we think that the liability is fully understood by these companies. I don't know about shorting these either right now, because oftentimes investors will try to, in this market, bounce them right back up. But nonetheless, that's what's going on. The other thing to talk about is this whole thing, you know, during this particular episode, what we're going to also talk about is this whole idea of, you know, when it comes to companies to buy or not to buy, are we thinking about a company like Goldman? I mean, look what's going on with Goldman. Goldman now is under a probe. Goldman is under a probe by, well, we saw what happened last week when the, I mean, that was pretty ugly, right? Watching how Goldman was being lambasted by the Senate subcommittee on investigation committee, we'll call it. And it was pretty ugly watching them squirm. And I guess they were, many of the Goldman folks that were talking were doing a lot of stalling tactics, it seemed. And they seem to have also been caught on that. But they are oblivious to any of the wrongdoing they may have done. Maybe they didn't do anything wrong. But Goldman stock is under fire from a couple different reasons. The first thing you have is their reputation. You know, that's a big issue. Even though they beat earnings handily last week, you know what? The stock is just getting pounded. The first day that the investigation came out and the announcement of the SEC investigation into the fraud dropped about 13%. Then what happened is it kind of came back a few percent after the earnings numbers. Everybody thought, okay, Goldman's going to settle. The news was all a flutter about Goldman settling. But you know what? Then came a criminal probe. So there's now this criminal probe into Goldman's trading accounts and into their trading, according to the Wall Street Journal. And the federal prosecutors are looking into whether the company or any of its employees committed securities fraud with its mortgage trading. So this was kind of in the Wall Street Journal. It was in the New York Post. And again, they were talking about settling with the SEC. So it looks like that there is some escalation in this whole matter from a criminal. Now, the civil and criminal side of this that's going to play out. And who knows how this plays into the financial reform bill that they're looking to split off derivatives trading, split off high-frequency trading, split off the banking, the core banking facilities of banks, if you will, of investment banks, from their proprietary trading. So there's a lot going on inside of all this, and Goldman stock is just getting killed. It's toxic right now. It's radioactive. And is it a good buy? Goldman's a quality company in terms of their earnings potential, but you know, reputation-wise, well tarnished right now. Very similar to the spill. If you think about the connection there, you know, companies are built on reputation, and if you have a reputation that, for example, what happened with Qualcomm last week, Qualcomm dropped, you know, 8%, then 10%, and 12%, and 15% in a couple of days. Why? Management upped their guidance, but came in and fell short dramatically. Now we are looking at Qualcomm as a company with a reputation problem. The management has a reputation problem. Very important when it comes to investing. All right, so this bill that we talked about is that's running through the Senate right now is probably going to get heated up with all this banter about Goldman. And of course, there's been already gatherings. There's been a group of hundreds of people that stopped in the J.P. Morgan office, said, "We want to see your leader, basically. We want to complain." They had picket signs, and they were, you know, walking through the streets because they believe that they've been wrong, that why should all these bankers get all this money and we're sitting here unemployed? So, you know, this whole derivatives market issue, this whole proprietary trading issue, if they do split it off and they do separate it, they'll still make money. But you know what? They won't have the backstop of the government. That's what they're trying to, you know, kind of do away with. In addition, when we look at that, you look at Intercontinental Commodity Exchange, ICE, is actually going to be acquiring the Climate Exchange, which is a leader in the development of trading emissions markets. So already we're talking about, you know, separating this, and there's some, you know, continuing talk about this cap and trade called the climate bill now. But the cap and trade bill right now is something that is kind of heating up along with this. Because in the financial reform, obviously, you know, President Obama is going after all the initiatives that he tried to talk about during his election. So let's talk some technology, shall we? So where do we begin? We want to talk about Google? Taking a little drink, sorry. Google. Google's planning to introduce an Android-based TV software to developers by mid-May. But at the same time, you know, it was interesting that they're pulling out their Android-based phone. You know, they have why is the name escaping me here? Somehow I don't remember the name of the phone. Anyway, their phone that they had, they were selling on their own, was going to be sold through Verizon. But there was some issue with the CDMA technology and the whole entire mismatch of the Verizon platform, so they say. So they're going to actually be pulling off the, whatever the name is. Somebody's going to help me here. I'm drawing a total blank. Anyway, the Google phone is going to be taken off the market from the Verizon standpoint. That's interesting. Then we see that Microsoft is going to be shelving their Courier. And what is that? That's their tablet. That's their developmental kind of tablet device, which they said, in quote, they're evaluating for use in future offerings, but we have no plan to build such a device at this time. And at the same time, HP buys Palm. Why would they do such a thing? Have you been looking at what, and thinking about why would Hewlett-Packard buy Palm, which is a company that's just suffering at the vine? I mean, just not doing anything good, right? Well, one of the reasons would be they have this WebOS. They have this kind of platform. And I wonder if they're trying to get not only in the tablet area, but now also going to be a competition point for Google on their system and on the iPhone with Apple. You know, Hewlett-Packard's been developing a platform and phones and trying to do things with Microsoft on the Microsoft Windows Mobile. But now they have their own OS. You know, the Palm Pre had a pretty decent OS, even though nobody wanted to use it. But yet at the same time, what if they bought that? And it is also rumored that there was a tremendous amount of patents that were worth a pretty good amount of money that HP is planning on utilizing for some of the device development that they have. So the mobile sensation that's going on with the growth, I think 20% growth in mobile handset over the last year. And now Hewlett-Packard is going to take a piece of it. So now we're talking about competition with Hewlett-Packard. Now we're talking about Apple. We're talking about Google. And, of course, Microsoft through HTC has been coming out with and trying their best to come out with some phone offerings. Not a phone particularly from themselves, besides this new Kin that they have. But yet, at the same time, because that's not a full smartphone, it's more of a social networking phone. So what's happening is there's a lot of controversy. Add to that, that Steve Jobs recently pretty much smacked Adobe right in the kisser. He said the mobile era is about to powering low power devices, touch interfaces, and open web standards, all areas where Flash falls short. Now, what I find really interesting is that I don't know why it doesn't necessarily, you know, the iPhone OS doesn't necessarily have to have a Flash-centric process. In other words, the movies and action and movement and interaction. But why can't they at least let Flash work and be seen on the iPhone? That would seem logical to me. But nonetheless, they don't. But this was a pretty big stab at Adobe from Steve Jobs. We knew that Flash was not going to be used, and we knew that Adobe was taking down their Flash platform for use on the iPhone. But they still have many different offerings that are based on the web. The question is going to be, where's the stock going to go? We want a little bit of the stock. We kind of tiptoed into it last week sometime, and it's kind of just sitting around, up 2%, down 2%. So we'll see where that goes. But, Adobe is a great company. Blew out earnings recently, last couple times, and we'll see where this goes right here. Two more things I want to talk about. Research. Why is research important? You know, one of the things that we saw on the last few weeks was a couple of research notes out from some of the big boys, you know, like a JP or Goldman or, Credit Suisse or whoever, UBS, whoever's out there. And we were looking at one in particular. We owned a company called Bucyrus, B-U-C-Y. It's a company that makes these gigantic, big trucking, drilling, mining equipment, excavation types of things. I mean, they're big. They're big. Kind of things that you'd want to drive on, you know? Joy Global is another company that makes that. Caterpillar is different. They make kind of the things that is put into. I mean, they have some of these too, but these are different. These are specialized. Mining and drilling and excavating equipment. Well, one of the things we read in the note that they put out was that An analyst went to meet with management at Bucyrus, and they found out that there really was no order flow. The next quarter's order flow was pretty lame. As a matter of fact, they said that, you know, management was kind of saying that, you know, things were good right now, but they have no orders in the pipeline moving forward. Now, when the earnings came out, they missed pretty dramatically. And we thought the stock was going to trade down pretty well. We sold the stock a couple weeks ago at about, I think it was 69 we sold the stock. And now it's about, I think it's 61, something like that. And we sold the stock on a nice profit. But what happened was that when the earnings came out, it popped up to about 70, 71, 72. And I was wondering, what is it that we're missing here? We see that in the management notes and in the conference call, they said that, you know, things, they see a lot of things happening out there, but not a lot of orders are being booked. And they call them bookings. So the bookings were very, very light. And we said, you know, that confirms what we had thought. That confirms the information that we saw. But why is it that the stock is going up? Well, it's going up because management had a good thing to say about. They see a lot of things happening. They see a lot of opportunities starting to brew. But the bottom line was, at the end of the day, there could be a lot of talk, a lot of chatter, a lot of hope, a lot of wishes. It's the proof is in the pudding. You have orders, you're going to make money. You don't have orders, you're not going to make money. So right now, we were right about exiting that position, and both Buki and Joy G, which is Joy Global, which we felt that right now, even though the gold prices are going up, you know, there may be kind of an end to some of the expansion for some of this industrial equipment, at least for the time being. On top of that, if you haven't been paying close attention to steel, which is pretty much dropping off a cliff. U.S. Steel, AK Steel, Nucor a little bit, but not as bad. But U.S. Steel and AK Steel are just in bad shape. Stocks have been dropping and dropping, even though AK Steel a few weeks ago came out with an announcement that they were going to increase their pricing on flat-rolled steel. This is not getting any traction right here. So you have to wonder if the materials segment of the economic recovery is at a point that it's going to be lagging from here on in. And as a matter of fact, it has been lagging. And the next kind of move would be more of a into the healthcare, the staples, possibly into the consumer discretionary area as well. And that could be the next part of this move. So we'll keep you updated on that, and we'll see what happens. Lastly, talking about consumer sentiment and home builders. So consumer sentiment was good. It hit a good number this week, although it was weaker than in March. University of Michigan hit 72 versus 71, but it was, again, weaker than March, and that kind of hurt the markets a bit when that came out on Friday of last week. But consumers consumer stocks were getting kind of a little bit hurt anyway in advance of all this. I thought that was really interesting. The one thing that was also interesting this week is how well the home builders and real estate generally did during the week. We talked to Frank Curzio last week about that special payment and how he's bullish on the home builders, Lennar's and the KB Homes and, you know, the whole slew of them, Hunvavian, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we saw that great number come out with about a 26% increase in, home purchases over the last period. And, of course, a lot of that had to do with the running out of the home credit. We'll see if that's actually renewed. But that $8,000, home credit that you get for buying a new home, et cetera, or a home, first-time buyers, et cetera. And just generally those things. We'll see if next month that has the cash for clunkers hangover effect. We'll see. Interesting. And banks? Well, many banks came out with just unbelievable earnings. When I say unbelievable, I mean unbelievable. I don't know how we believe them, but right now that's all we got to work with. So, you know, be careful on the banks, you know, especially these investment banks, the JPs, particularly the Bank of America that has a lot of trading that goes along with it through their Merrill, Goldman Sachs. Is very big into that. Those are the three biggies. A couple of others out there, but those are three biggies that you have to watch out, because if any of these issues spread, the question is, kind of where is that going to go? And are there going to be further inquiries into the trading of CDOs and criminal investigations and inquiries by the SEC into some of these other positions? Anyway, that's the news for the week. I thought we'd spend some time doing that, have a little fun with maybe a little bit of Andrew alone time. Hopefully I didn't bore you too much, and hopefully it gave you some interesting things. If you do want to see what we do from a management standpoint for clients, head over to the Disciplined Investor, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll have a link. Check it out. Watch the 14-minute video. Buy the book over at Amazon. Check out DH Unplugged, the Winning Investor podcast. And, of course, follow me on Twitter. You get first crack at all the things that we write on a regular basis on our blog, etc. But I encourage you, I encourage you very strongly in this show to take action, to take some action. Get in the game. If you're not in the game, if you're paralyzed, get in the game. There are opportunities, and what's the worst thing that can happen? Think about it for a second. Think about that for the rest of this week. Think about that as you consider what we just talked about on the show. Great opportunities and on both sides of the equation, and I think that by being disciplined and having an investment thesis, you're going to do all the better. I wish you a great week. Thanks for joining me here on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll see you next week. Got some great guests coming up, as I mentioned earlier, and I look forward to spending another time with you in the future. Last thing, if you can go over to iTunes and do me a favor, just simply go over and leave a review and a rating on iTunes. That would be just terrific. This is Andrew Horowitz. Thanks for joining me today on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.